Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome back to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by Ironman U, RunCatalina.com, the Challenge Athlete Foundation, where we've raised over $65 million to keep athletes in the game of life and sport. And, of course, you can check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or subscribe on iTunes. Our next guest, the Iron Cowboy, James Lawrence, 50 full iron distance triathlons in 50 days in 50 states. James, how the heck are you?
I am doing fantastic now that I'm finished.
I was going to say, that is a heck of an undertaking. Back in the day, I had Dean Karnazes on talking about 50 marathons in 50 days in 50 states. That sounds like chopped liver. Now, when you start talking about 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike ride, and then a 26.2-mile run afterwards. Talk a little bit about what led to this for you.
Well, I didn't wake up one day and just say, hey, this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to do it next week. This has been a quest or a journey in the making over the last 5 or 6 years. Just started to do half Ironmans. And raise money for charity. And back in 2010, we accidentally broke a world record in the efforts to raise money for charity. That just organically led to 2012, where we did 30 full Ironmans through 11 countries, all official events.
Wow!
And we did both of those efforts to raise money for dams in Africa through a charity called Quiet Way.
Okay.
And had a ton of fun doing that. And, I got to the end of 2012 and those world records, and I just didn't feel like I'd made the impact that I wanted to have. I didn't feel like I pushed myself physically and mentally. I remember sitting post Ironman Arizona in November on race 28 of the 30, the idea just came to my head, and I was like, I've got to do this. And it was bad timing on my part. I immediately announced it to my wife, and I can't remember. She probably should have slapped me at the time, but she told me I wasn't allowed to bring it up again until the following year. So I patiently waited, and then reintroduced the concept to her, and it kind of was born at that time.
What's fascinating to me is when you talk about breaking the world record in a number of 70.3 races in 1 year, and then you go, okay, I'll do a full iron distance. That seems plenty. Talk about a little bit your background. Were you an endurance guy growing up, more of a ball sports guy?
Yeah, no, I've always been an individual kind of sports guy. I dabbled with basketball. I played a little bit of volleyball. Was arguably horrible at both of them, and I'm just an average white Canadian, and so I'm vertically challenged, and I wasn't very good on skates, and so I had to do something else, and I chose to wrestle, and I wrestled competitively for 11 years and absolutely loved it.
Right.
And I think that's where I got a lot of my discipline and a lot of my mental toughness was during those early years as I developed as an athlete. Just like any typical or average American, we get complacent and we get settled into our daily lives. And I needed a competitive outlet and something to do. And so I just casually picked up running. As an adult, I had to, I did your typical lake swimming or whatever. But as an adult, I had to learn to do pool swimming and lap swimming and actual swim strokes to be able to complete an Ironman. I remember getting in the pool and I thought I was just totally impressed with myself once I could swim a 500 meters straight in a pool. I mean, that was just a massive accomplishment for me.
So when you talk about making, running some, you seem like the type of guy, you get in the running, get in the marathons, and I'm guessing you started doing a lot of marathons.
I actually did one marathon early on, and I actually hated it.
Really?
It crippled me, and it pointed me in the direction of triathlon, just because I love the diversity of training for all three sports. And I did sprint triathlons for 3 or 4 years before I even had a desire to try anything longer. I really enjoyed the speed, the intensity, and the amount of training hours it took to do the sprint distance and triathlon. I really enjoyed those years.
What was your first long distance race, triathlon wise?
My first iron distance or long distance triathlon was the Vineman in California.
Yep.
In 2008, and so it was 4 years after I picked up triathlon that I attempted to do the long distance, and I really enjoyed it. There was just so many different facets to it, as far as it wasn't just swim, bike, run as fast as you can, and you know, redline it and pin it. You really, there's a lot of more thought that goes into it. There's some strategy that plays into it. So you have to not only be athletic, I think you have to have a certain amount of intelligence to execute that distance effectively.
Well, and it's basically an eating and drinking contest. You've got to make sure that you're staying fueled the other time. Or your biggest mistake you made in those early days of long distance racing?
It was definitely nutrition.
Yeah,
it's one of the most overlooked components to triathlon, and I would say strength training. In my later years, and as I started to do these bigger events, I got more into heavy Olympic lifting and the strength side of things to make me more durable as an athlete. And I think that's why I've been successful in kind of these longer endurance quests, is because I am durable and because I did put so much emphasis on the strength part of things, which is overlooked in our sport, in my opinion.
Well, you know, that's a really good point, because I think what happens is people are so stressed with swim, bike, run, they go, you know what, I'm not going to do the flexibility stuff because when I get off the bike, I don't have time to stretch anyways. I'm just going to go run. And strength stuff, do I really need that? How strong do I need to be to get out of the saddle, ride the bike? So, but if you listen to Dave Scott and Craig Alexander and Christy Wellington, obviously strength is a huge part of what made them great.
Yeah, like I said, it is, and I'm attributing a huge part of my success to strength training, and my coach, David Warden, he's of the same mindset. And you look at any of these athletes that have success at these levels, they were just powerhouses on the bike, and then they could run like nobody's business. And you just can't produce that type of power without some type of strength training and the durability for the amount of years that those guys did it at that level, and to not break down and to be so consistent without being injured. You know, it totally makes sense to me that those names and legends that you just mentioned were advocates the same way that I am of it.
So one of the things I noticed from your website, obviously nutrition is a huge deal for you, not just as something in a race, but just the way we live our lifestyles today. You mentioned on your site the first generation of kids who won't live as long as their parents, and 20% of all medical costs are attributed to obesity. How important was that aspect of this in terms of you committing to this 50-50-50?
Yeah, nutrition was a huge part of it, and you know, a lot of people, they look on the surface of what I do and how I accomplish the things that I do, and they instantly assume that I'm single, and you know, I've actually got 5 kids, all in elementary school, and that's where it is super obvious to me that there's a problem with this next generation, because I am involved in the school systems and with my kids. And You take a look around, and it's apparent that it's a problem. And so for me to incorporate that type of eating, both as an athlete and as a parent, I think is critical, for overall health and wellness. I mean, you take a look at these kids, and there's so many studies out there that have correlations between, kids and ADD and their attention spans and their ability to learn and their testing skills. And it just, there's a direct correlation and parallels to childhood obesity and these kids that are unhealthy. And so it's impacting this generation in an incredibly negative way.
So was there a tipping point for you when you decide to change the way you fueled yourself at some point? Did you feel like, you know what, I got to change what I'm doing? Or was this something that's always been important to you?
You know, growing up as a wrestler, you know, trying to make weight and yeah. you know, you have to be eating the right things when ounces and pounds, you know, matter. And so it's kind of always been that way. And trust me, I didn't grow up in an overwhelmingly healthy household. I mean, I've got three sisters and a mom, and they all struggle with obesity and weight. And so it's definitely not a genetic thing. There's very few cases, in my opinion, that overweight or obesity is 100% genetic.
No.
I think it's a choice and ingrained. And I say children are a product of their environments, and I truly believe that. And so for me, you know, it's been a conscious decision, and I struggle as much as everybody else does, and I have to make those decisions to eat healthy and teach my family and kids about how to do things. And it's something that my wife and I really try to work on and try to instill those core values to our kids as far as like healthy eating and choices and the educational pieces. And that's really what's missing. It's just, there's so much misinformation out there as pertaining to nutrition.
You know what else? I've had, you know, Dean Karnes is a good friend. We've had him on the show numerous times. And one of the things that came across to me in that movie, Ultramarathon Man, and he talked about this, that, you know, he was setting up runs as he ran across the country, you know, for people could run like you've set up people to run the last 5K. And so many times it was kids coming out and parents with their kids. And I think a lot of times people think that kids don't like to run, that kids don't want to go out there and run a 5K or a 10K, whatever it happens to be. But he found just the opposite. Kids love it, but they're, you know, most of the time it's treated as punishment, so they don't get involved in it, right? Because it's like you take a lap, you did something wrong.
Yeah, no kidding. I remember as a kid it was punishment. We were being too rambunctious. Hey, run around the block. I'm like, dang it. You know?
Darn it, yeah.
You know, so it is kind of looked at as a punishment, but I found the exact same thing. I mean, the kids that came out and participated with us across the country, I mean, they just loved it, and all my kids, they love it, and I don't force any of them to run, and we certainly don't use running as a punishment. And I mean, my daughter, she set an unbelievable example to kids. She ran all 55 Ks in 50 states in 50 days.
Wow!
As a 12-year-old girl, and I was just totally inspired every single day by her, and the whole crew and everything got behind her as far as. You know, some of the days, because the travel was so intensive between states, we'd send the motor home early, and my vehicle that I'd be traveling in would stay late, and we wanted to make sure that the drivers that was driving the kids and my family were getting enough rest, so we'd send them ahead. And it got to the point where the whole crew knew how important it was for Lucy to run the 5K, that they, you know, we made sacrifices as a team to ensure that she could continue to set that example for kids across the country. That really, as a 12-year-old, I mean, you can still be athletic and you can still do really hard things.
So when you started this, it's like one of those things, and you mentioned on your website, you got Edmund Hillary climbing Everest and Roger Bannister, first guy to go under 4-minute mile. And, you know, Roger had been told, hey, if you go under 4 minutes, your heart's going to explode. Yeah. And people who change the game and break records, there's always, you know, a little bit of the unknown. You don't really know. The first guys did Ironman. They didn't know they could do that thing in one day or do it at all. So for you, when you were getting ready for the first day of 50-50-50, what was going through your mind? Because you don't really know at that point if you can actually do this.
I guess there was that unknown of if it's physically possible, but here's two kind of points that I want to make.
Yeah.
In order to try to accomplish something like that, you have to have so much belief and so much conviction, especially with the enormity of what the project was, that I had to be in a position where I absolutely could not waver, and I had to have that belief. And so my mindset was so unbelievably set on what I was doing. And two, my perspective and from where I was sitting was completely different than the person who was maybe hearing about what I was doing for the first time. I had evolved my mind and my body over an fairly extended period of time as far as getting the experience with each time that we were doing the records with the halves and the full and the mental preparation and all of the training that went into it. I did not take the preparation portion of this lightly, and I really respect the distance, and I respected what I was about to take on. And you know, so for me sitting there before I was about to start, I was way more excited than I was nervous or worried, because I couldn't, I didn't have the luxury of entertaining a negative thought or any doubt or any worry. And my crew actually sheltered me from a lot of the negativity that was out there once we started, because we did. I mean, I got laughed at as far as announcing something so ridiculous and so bigger than anything is out there. I mean, you look at it, and a lot of, you know, some people can wrap their mind around an Ironman. And
right.
Then there's the next level of the Epic Five, which Rich Roll, you know, talks a lot about. And that's kind of, well, that's the standard of, wow, that's insane and impossible. Most people don't even know that there's a DECA out there. And then fewer people even know that there was a group in Italy that did 30 Ironmans in 30 days.
Oh, my God. I never even heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was a one-time thing. A group of guys did it, and it was just like you know, people's perception of what's possible is just it actually shocked me how negative people were and how closed-minded people were about what is possible.
Right.
And so, you know, sitting there day number one, not knowing, yeah, what was going to happen, but I had enough belief and conviction in myself, my preparation, and my team that we at least had one hell of a shot.
So, Ty, one of the things, again, from talking to Dean, he said, yeah, the running was obviously difficult, but the running paled in comparison to logistics in terms of putting all this stuff together, where are you going to stay, getting from one state to another. Talk a little bit about the – because one thing to do logistics for 26 miles. You do it for 140.6 every single day. Talk a little bit about the logistics and the planning that went into this.
Yeah, and I have the utmost respect for Dean and what he did and the path that he's created for a lot of us that have come after him. He's the absolute pioneer. But I would have loved to have the logistics that he was dealing with as far as, you know, trying to figure out just 26.2.
Right, yeah.
What we were trying to figure out was kind of just a next level up from that. You know, you're talking about covering 112 on the bike everywhere that we went, and I had to sit down and, you know, before we started and still now, I mean, I'm not rich by any stretch of the imagination with five kids and, you know, just a coaching job. You know, I did most everything by myself leading up to this. And so I sat at a computer for hours on end with Google Earth and just like looking at stretches of road, making sure it didn't turn into gravel or it didn't end abruptly or there was a big enough shoulder. And It was just hours and hours and hours of trying to figure out those logistics and the courses that we were going to do and the route in which we were going to travel. I mean, I was trying to work with and manage 50 different volunteers that were helping me on the ground in each of the states, and trying to remember the conversations with all of these people was very difficult.
Yeah, yeah.
And trying to keep it straight. And you know, and then you get through 20 states and you're working on 30, and guy from state number one contacts you and you're like, oh, I don't remember these conversations.
Yeah.
And so, you know, just trying to organize, it was like literally running a startup small business with no help, all by yourself.
And the what surprised you? I remember when you're running across the country and you're on your bike, there's roadkill, there's cars. And what was the biggest surprise for you in all of this?
The two things. I knew that I would deal with fatigue.
Yeah.
But I was surprised at how intense and how early the overwhelming fatigue was for me. I was watching parts of the documentary back just last week, and as early as race number four, I was describing and talking about tunnel vision and falling asleep on the bike. And you know, when you look back at it and realize that you had to do 46 more Ironmans in 46 days, averaging 4 hours of sleep a night, you know, I honestly don't know how we accomplished what we did as a team. Just looking back on it, I'm in shock.
Yeah.
with what we did. And I think the other thing that surprised me in a pleasant way was the way that the country came together and just really put me and my family and my crew on their shoulders and made sure that we were just had every possible chance to accomplish this and put us on their shoulders as we came through and helped us logistically and helped us with food and planning and everything that was involved while we were there in the state. I mean, the kids and my wife, they had a little bit different experience than I did, but they got to, you know, they got in a lot of the state. They were treated to whatever was cool in the area, be it a zoo, a museum, an amusement park, a water park, a day at the beach, whatever. I mean, these people in these states just came out and hosted us and took care of my family, which was super humbling. And I was glad to witness it firsthand, just the generosity that the United, you know, States people came out and kind of came together in that cause.
Isn't it? That's always surprising. You know, people are just good, right? People are, you find that 99.9% of the people that you run into when you're doing stuff like that are just really kind, caring people.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And you know, with the way that media is today and everything's so damn negative.
Yeah,
and
skeptical.
You almost get this totally skewed perception of what the reality is of, you know, you hear of these scary cities and whatnot on the news and super dangerous, and you just pigeonhole that city or something as, man, that's a super horrible place. And then you go there, and the people were just unbelievably nice and, like, overwhelmingly nice. And you know, it's just a shame that the news and the media is so slanted towards just negative and violence and all of the bad things that are going on, that you do forget how incredibly awesome this country and the people in it really are.
What was the coolest experience you had during the 50-50-50?
Oh, man. That's a really hard question, only because there was so many just unique experiences that tie the whole thing in, and every experience out there means so much because of the enormity of what we were trying to accomplish. You know, for me, obviously, Utah was a super special day. It was my final state. It meant we'd accomplished the goal that we tried to set out and accomplish. I mean, 3,500 people came out and
wow,
biked and ran with me, and it was just electric, and it was just a super emotional celebration for myself and my crew and the family. I mean, it's hard to imagine and put into words to describe what we went through as a unit. And I really don't think there's many people out there that will truly comprehend what it took while we were out there to accomplish this. And we've developed such a close unity between the core crew that was out there that it's really special for us. There was just so many great experiences. And what was really cool is all the people that would come out that was touched or moved by what we were doing and shared their stories and their struggles with us. So to isolate one, I almost think it would be unfair. But to give an answer,
yeah,
I'll say that I looked forward to my 7 o'clock appointment every day with my daughter, because that truly was the moment every day when I got to reconnect with my family. My family was out there every single day with me.
Yep.
But that 7 o'clock, I knew that I was out there alone. And at 7 o'clock, I knew I was going to get a family report. I was going to have, a 35-minute conversation with someone that means the world to me. And so the highlight of my day was probably every day at 7 o'clock.
So basically, that's when you do the 5K?
Yeah, every day at 5 o'clock. No matter what part of the marathon I was at, I would meet back at a designated place.
Yeah.
I would do a presentation for everybody that had showed up. We would, they would already have numbers and everything passed out. And at 7 o'clock, we would start a 5K, and then however many miles I had after the 5K, I would invite people to participate with me. Sometimes I had 6 miles to go. Sometimes I had 15 miles to go. And so depending on how successful the event of the day was and what obstacles we ran into, I mean, sometimes I was done by 11:30 at night, and sometimes I was done at 3:30 in the morning.
What was the – was there a low point? And a lot of times when you're doing something, like when you're doing a 100-mile run, when you get to mile 50, you're going, oh, my God, I got to do that again. When you got to triathlon 50 or 25, where you're like, oh, I'm only halfway done.
I got to, like, say 20 or 25, and people are like, oh, man, these were such big landmarks for people.
Yeah.
And I I wanted to celebrate. Yeah, we did 20. And then to follow up with the sentence, but I have 30 more, you know, was just so daunting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, you know, the DECA is like the ultimate standard as far as like you're the biggest badass in the endurance world.
Right.
And to try to internalize and say the words, hey, awesome, I've done 20, I have 3 DECAs to go.
Oh,
you know,
my God.
It was just so overwhelming. And so. So we started as a team. We didn't really talk about it. And once we got close enough to where I could say, I've got, and it was just mind games, right? So I would say, like, let's say I had 18 races to go. I would talk in terms of single digits. I would say I've got 10 to go till 8 to go.
I can
wrap my brain around 10, and I can wrap my brain around 8. But 18 sucks ass.
It does.
And so. So for me, I would go, yep, 10 to go to 8 to go, 10 to go to 8 to go, I can do that. 10 to go to 3 to go, 10 to go to 3 to go. And then once I got into double digits, I was, you know, I'd always hold up my hands. I'd be like, hey, crew, boom, 9 to go, you know. Now I can start wrapping my brain around it. But until that point, it became totally moot to talk about how many we had left, and the focus became on what we'd accomplished, not what we still had ahead of us.
Did you have one of those days where the, you know, wind was howling, rain's coming sideways, where you just had brutal, brutal, brutal conditions?
We had a taste of everything. I have grown to be disgusted with wind. I just hate it.
Yeah, it's the worst. It's just worse than anything.
It is worse than anything.
Yeah,
it's so disgustingly demoralizing.
Yep.
That it just takes the winds out of your sails, and it doesn't matter if your power is exactly the same with or without the wind. To look down and go, shoot, I'm going 8 miles an hour.
Yep.
And I'm putting out a solid effort. But no, we had wind. We chased a hurricane for 3 days, for crying out loud. Which sucks. And then at Wisconsin, we just got poured on for the entire run. And hell, I've got to give tons of props to Wisconsin. They came out 400 strong and ran with me in the rain. It was unbelievable. Yeah, just so much support and they all had such big smiles on their face. I loved Wisconsin. That was a fantastic state to go in. And North Carolina was unbelievable too. That crew was so organized, and I mean, we had 80 strong on the bike all day. I mean, it was just crazy. Yeah, it was intense, man. It was fun.
So when you come
but
out,
I was just gonna say, yeah, wind, rain. I mean,
everything.
Tennessee, 106 degrees. I mean, you just, you know, high humidity. You name it. We biked and ran through it.
How did your body come through this? Again, a lot of times when people do this type of stuff, they at the end of it, they go, you know what? I'm really no worse for wear. I feel like I'm actually stronger in some ways.
You know, now that we're on the tail end of it and I survived it and I didn't die.
Yeah.
You know, the only thing that I'm dealing with right now, and it's even, I mean, we're 90% better, is with about 2 weeks to go, maybe 10 days, I was completely numb in my ring finger and my pinky finger on both hands. And in my toes. And the reason is your body becomes super efficient, or needs to become efficient, and it stops sending blood flow to the extremities.
Right.
Because it's sending so much blood flow and oxygen to your major organs. And so it's not that my body was shutting down. It was just, it was sending the needs to my most needed parts of my body.
Right.
And unfortunately, my body didn't, it said, okay, in order to keep his heart and his lungs and everything functioning at 100% capacity, I am going to risk losing or sending blood flow to the extremities, because we can risk and survive without having those. And so I lost some dexterity with my hand. And the numbness has now gone away. And I'm really happy that I can hold a golf club and still put a swing on it. So.
Now, what was the financial goal? Did you have a financial goal that you wanted to raise money for, you know, a specific charity?
Yeah, we were working with the Jamie Oliver Foundation, and really people was like, well, why did you pick them? And, I just loved Jamie's message. Um, he's he's a little bit like my personality. He's very bold and brash and kind of in your face about talking about the elephant in the room. I mean, it's such a sensitive topic about kids and overweight and obesity and the, you know, being the nation number one killer. And you know, it's just, people just don't want to talk about it. And I don't know if they're ashamed or embarrassed or whatever it is, but Jamie just gets in your face and talks about the cause and the problem. And that just really resonated with me. And I love that approach. And, you know, I had a goal of $1 million, just because I wanted to set something super big. And I'm not done raising money. I mean, we missed that goal huge, but I think it's admirable to raise the amount that we did. We raised over $70,000,
and I was super proud
to write out that check. And you know, we're continuing to raise money now. I'm doing merchandise sales that we donate a portion of that to it. We're going to be doing some race series that we're going to donate money to that. We're going to do a coaching platform and donate some of it to that. And so I've got a lot of really fun, creative ways to continue to raise money, because I honestly do. I want to hit that mark. I want to make that impact. And I think it's important enough to continue to bring that awareness. It literally is the number one killer in the U.S. and worldwide.
No question. So what's next? I'm sure while you're doing 50-50-50, you're probably already thinking, I wonder what I should do next.
Yeah, well, hopefully, as far as like what's next in physical and mental challenges, hopefully I've played my man card and I don't need to reshuffle that deck and play it again.
And I'm sure your wife is going, you've played that. Yeah, you've played plenty of that.
Well, and I've been physically and emotionally threatened that if I even have an inkling of an idea that I'm not allowed to bring it up, and 2016 is solely dedicated to whatever the hell she wants to do.
As well, she should be.
And I respect that. My wife is a complete angel and deserves even more than that. But you know what? We're working. I'm working closely with Matt Fitzgerald on our book that we're writing. I really respect him as a writer.
And, he's phenomenal.
He is unbelievable. And I was honored when he accepted the challenge to write this type of book with me. And then we filmed a documentary while we were out there. That'll drop hopefully the beginning part of 2016 before the book. And then like I said, I'm going to relaunch my coaching platform. I've taken the last month to just kind of decompress. And my biggest focus is going to be on speaking. I think what I've accomplished and how I accomplished it and trying to empower people to think bigger. And get people active and doing things and you know, attacking the impossible and not putting, you know, salary caps are made for professional sports.
Right.
And I think too many people put salary caps on their own lives and their own expectations. And you know what? There is no salary cap on anybody's life. And so to go out and, you know, talk about that to people and hopefully reinstill some hope and dreams and allow people to dream and dream big, man. Just
always.
just forget about what people are telling you can and can't do. I'd be sitting behind the desk if I listened to 90% of the people that told me I was crazy and I couldn't do. You know, but now I'm living a life that I love and it's a passion of mine, and I'm not rich, but I enjoy what I do and I'm happy to do it.
So Iron Cowboy, give me the genesis of that. Where'd that come from?
Yeah, 2011, Ironman Canada. I mean, if you've ever attended an Ironman event, it sucks as a spectator. I mean, it's possibly, I dare say I'd rather watch paint dry than go sit in the hot sun for 3 seconds of, you know, someone going by.
Right.
And spectators are there for the athletes, and it's that reinvigoration that the athlete gets when they see their loved ones. And it means the world to the athlete. And so total respects to the spectators of a painful sport. And the reality is we all have the fame out there. And so it's even more painful when your spectator has been watching for hours and hours and hours and then misses as you go by. And so jokingly, I said to my kids and my wife, you know what? You're not going to miss me. I'm going to put on a cowboy hat. You're going to see me coming. And I did. I ran the marathon with a cowboy hat in Ironman Canada 2011, And man, I stuck out like a damn sore thumb.
Yeah.
And people loved it. I mean, they were cheering for me. People that didn't even know me were cheering for me, and I gave them something different to talk about during their day. And it just stuck. I ended up in the 2012 world record. I wore a cowboy hat during every portion of the marathon, and it became a trademark or a way that I was now recognizable. And it just stuck. I got called the Iron Cowboy, and you know, people that know me, they're like, "You're not a cowboy. Come on." But it just stuck, and now I'm eternally the Iron Cowboy.
And so, if people want to find out more about how to help the cause and find out about the documentary and eventually on a book too, it's just ironcowboy.co.
Yeah, ironcowboy.co, and that website will link to all of our social media. But my Facebook handle is just Facebook.com/ironcowboy, and then my Instagram is /ironcowboychains. But all of the social media, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, it's all clickable on our website at ironcowboy.co. And if you feel compelled to try to fight this epidemic, you can click on our donate button. And it links directly to the Jamie Oliver Foundation. None of these funds funnel or go through me. I never see them. I don't even know what our total is now, but would greatly appreciate it. And then that way we do know how much we are raising. So if you could donate through our website, we'd really appreciate it. There's just a donate button there.
That was 7,030 miles. Is that what that was?
Yeah, 7,034, I think, was the total miles we did. Yeah, it's silly to think about.
It's silly, but it's cool. Really, really cool.
Yeah, thanks.
James, thanks so much for taking time. Iron Cowboy, again, you can check that out at ironcowboy.co. And you said the documentary will break right after the first of 2016?
Yeah, right at the beginning of the year, we hope to have everything done. The crew is just working 24 hours a day trying to edit the thing.
I love it. Now, how did you fund all of this?
Yeah, you know, we live in an amazing world of corporate sponsors and things like that, where they've got that money to spend in their budgets, and they have to spend it for tax reasons. And so I thought, you know what, I'm going to go get some of that.
Good boy.
And I contacted companies that I have been using and been an advocate anyways for years and years and years, and then I just begged them,
right?
Flat out begged them to be part of what I was doing. And so all of the sponsors that I use are I feel really good about. I'm very loyal to, and are literally products that I've used for many, many years. I didn't want to jump on board with somebody brand new just because they were throwing money at me. And so I'm very proud of that. I've kept a lot of them Utah sponsors, and then also sponsors that have helped me out. Young Living, in particularly, Essential Oils. They were instrumental in allowing me to even make this attempt possible. And so just a huge shout out to them. And that Jay Bird was absolutely phenomenal with us as well. And many other phenomenal companies, Ultra Shoes, Fazari Bikes, just tremendously fantastic Utah companies that I'm proud to be associated with.
Now, during the 50 days, did you do any races, any regular Ironman races, or were all these courses that you just discovered and created?
Yeah, we did all of our own races. We were part of the HITS Kingston, New York event, only because we were in that part of the country at the same time frame. And the reason we stayed away from official events for two reasons. One, when somebody's doing an official event, selfishly and rightfully so, that day is about them, their journey, and everything else that they put into that. And
right.
So in order to get the attention that we need, and I found out in 2012, which was part of my frustration, that by doing all official events, I didn't get the exposure I wanted for the charity because, again, rightfully so, everybody's focused on their preparation and their job. And it was almost selfish of me to think that I was trying to take them away from their experience and their journey. And so we did all of our own events. And in an official event, we wouldn't have had the opportunity to have people join us.
Exactly.
It's typically a closed, a closed course. You know, and so people joined me for every portion of it, swim, bike, and run. And we wouldn't have had that opportunity, to allow people to join us and create that harmonistic unity out there. And so, and again, and also we wouldn't have had any chance to do a 5K at 7 o'clock during a real event.
No.
And so that was our biggest motivation and reason for not doing it. It was so that we could, one, incorporate everybody, and two, it gave us the best shot at raising the money. Because all the funds from people joining us is what we donated.
Love it. Hey, so when that film's ready to come out, let us know. We'll set up a showing here with Tri Club of San Diego. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, for sure. I'll come out there and we'll do a little private showing.
Love it. That'll be great. James Lawrence has been our guest. The Iron Cowboy. IronCowboy.co is the website. 50 iron distance races in 50 days in 50 states. We are brought to you by Ironman U. RunCatalina.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation, where we've raised over $65 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. Check out any of our interviews on Babbittville.com or on iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.